Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Jeff, there is one album, and one album only, that everybody has been talking about this past week.
Jagged Edge's Jagged Little Thrill.
There you go, yes. Yeah. Finally, it's getting the recognition that it is long deserved.
Yes, so when people say, where the party at?
The party's in 2018.
The party is at a pop-up shop in Bushwick.
Oh, God. Jeff. Yeah. Meek Mill's Championships is the album that I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that I have been listening to a lot. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk on Joe Budden's podcast. There's been a lot of talk. Elliot Wilson had his event with Meek Mill last night, Crown. But there's been a lot of talk around the Jay-Z verse,
mm-hmm.
the Drake collaboration. But also, I feel like the next biggest person from this album might be his engineer.
Anthony Cruz.
Anthony Cruz, who we have on the podcast today.
Bam, 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 bam.
And boy, do we get into a lot about Championships, a lot about the work that was put in to make this such a fine piece of art. But in addition to that, we get into Anthony's story, because he's not just Cruz. He's Anthony.
He's Anthony Cruz.
And we talk about his growing up in Oklahoma, moving to Colorado and Atlanta, and eventually up here to New York, and working with Young Guru and Mary J. Blige and
Neo.
And Neo, and getting to be Meek Mill's engineer, and all the work that they put in over the years, what they did while he was away. I mean, it's really a fantastic story. And we also got to talk to Meek's videographer,
Will.
And there's just great stories about Rick Ross and the whole MMG and what Roc Nation means and what Atlantic Records did for everyone. It's a great hour and a half.
Yeah.
Jeff, we also have a Meek Mill story of our own from this week.
Oh, right. I forgot about this.
We went to Meek Mill's album release party. We headed down on the subway. We got off at 14th Street. We walked up a couple of streets to 16th, a couple of avenues over to the Dream Hotel, where we saw the line outside. We turned around
and we listened to the album at home. So when people ask, you know, Eric, Jeff, how do you guys remain so humble?
You know what the real answer is, Jeff? And I'm being really honest with this. The answer is we used up all of our connections. We texted as much as we can. We yelled at any bouncer that we could.
Right.
And furiously went home.
That sounds like us.
On the podcast today is Cruz, as we discussed. But guys, here's something that you can do. Get ready for the holidays by going to itsthereal.com/shop and getting one of our new monthly winter sweatshirts. They are super dope and high in demand. Get yours now before they run out. Itsthereal.com/shop. Jeff, anything else that I'm missing?
Yes.
What's that?
Every week, we like to recommend three other podcasts. If you like this one, then you might also like.
And which ones do you recommend today?
I want to start with number 119, Dallas Martin.
Well, that is the one. Dallas Martin, for everyone who is unaware, Dallas is the Flint, Michigan-born, Atlanta-raised, L.A. currently living A&R for MMG, all your favorite Meek projects, the self-made projects. You talk about Jadakiss and Jewel Santana. He's been around for a while and created super dope work. Nipsey Hussle, man, just a lot of great work that he's putting out. Roddy Ricch on the way. Dallas Martin is an episode you have to listen to, episode number 119.
Number 74, Wayno Clark.
Shout out to our friend Wayno. Now, of course, you know him from Everyday Struggle, but when we interviewed him, we talked about his entire journey, which was super compelling and very, very, very inspirational to a lot of you out there.
Yeah, people say it's one of our best.
He talked about his entire journey. He is born and bred up there in Harlem and has made it so far as both a personality, but also as a manager. I know TJ Porter is out there right now cooking up some really, really dope music over at Def Jam. Shout out to Wayno Clark, and please listen to that episode number
74.
74.
But also, finally, number 182... the SVP of marketing at Atlantic Records, Marcia St. Hubert.
There's not much more that we can say about our sister, Marcia St. Hubert, other than she's just the most wonderful person and has done work with Kodak Black and Cardi B and Gucci Mane and Mano and DJ Drama and T.I. and Tamar Braxton and Jill Scott and Lupe Fiasco, and a million others, Meek Mill. She's the most accomplished person who deserves every bit of shine that she's getting right now. And her story is wonderful. Her personality is just outrageous. And her story is one to listen to. Please go listen to that Marcia St. Hubert episode.
That's it.
All right.
Yeah.
When do you want to get into this one?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Paul Revere, a.k.a. Soldier Boy, tell him.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Thought I Had the Juice, a.k.a. Marcia Clark.
Yo, what up? It's Cruz, a.k.a. Hey, yo, don't you be with Meek Mills, a.k.a. Turn Me Up Cruz, a.k.a. Respect the Engineer.
Yeah, this is your third favorite podcast to waste time with. It's for real. Cruz, what's happening?
What's up, fellas?
Everything's good. Yo, congratulations on a really big week.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Like,
a lot of love.
Oh, like, did you ever think in, like, the days when there was a lot of negative energy out there, a lot of, like, down days, did you ever think that there would be, like, such a celebration like you've experienced this past week?
I think we always envision overcoming the struggle because there's only so long a storm could last with, especially with a talented act like Meek.
What was your response when you heard Joe Budden and Rory and Maul killing you for not being in the session that Jay recorded his What's Free verse?
Yeah, they were 100% right. I had nothing to do with that session. So shout out to those guys because, first of all, the love they gave at the beginning, like Joe Budden's energy, I'm using that as an alarm clock every morning. That was amazing. But yeah, like Guru, I got all that from conversations with Guru, all the lead up to the verse actually being recorded. So like Guru hit me with the initial like, yo, he just called me to come out and officially record the verse. Because it was this thing of like, he was talking about it and I'm almost done. I'm still working on it. It's going to be long, whatever, right? And so we're getting nervous because it's going down to the wire. And I'm like, I hope he comes through. I hope it's not like he's just gassing us up or whatever, which I would hope he wouldn't do.
Right.
Yeah. Or so, comes through with like the four bars.
Yeah, the four bar, like, all right, Meek, take it back. Yeah, but so Guru called and he's like, so I just got the call. He wants to record the verse Saturday. And then he spit like the first bar. You know, he's like, in the land of the free with blacks enslaved. And he's like, that's all I'm gonna give you. And I was just like losing my mind. And he's like, don't tell Meek. And I text Meek right away. Like, so I text Meek right away. Like, we're both like super Jay-Z fans. So I'm like, yo, he's ready. Don't tell anybody I told you. He told me not to say nothing. He's like, I'm not gonna say shit. You know, strong arm emojis. Like, we were lit. Yeah, that was so legendary. And then when he actually got there and got it recorded, he's like, that was the fastest he's ever recorded a guest verse that in recent memory.
Wow.
When he got to his house, he was just like ready to go. Usually he's like, I have to wait around. I'm like, you know, so, but he was ready to go and he just knocked it right out. And, you know, like they talk about also Joe and them are like, how could you just go and be like, yeah, I'm going to chill with the kids or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, I'm thinking like, yo, you had to go to the gym and like work out, like pump iron, like something. You can't just get that verse off and just be like, all right, cool. I'm going to go just chill, have lunch real quick. You know what I mean?
Like, did you send him like all the stems and just like leave everything open?
Yeah, well, the good thing about having Guru mixing the album is like he already had all the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So he had the stems. He had the session already broken down. So we sent Jay the instrumental and then kind of like the open after Meek and stuff just for him to kind of vibe to. But obviously he didn't need any of it.
Yeah.
He just was like, cool, just the beat and just went bananas on it. He's like, so I'm going to have to reformat this because he went so crazy. I got to figure out how to like format the beat. And, you know, so it was good problem to have.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, what was the approach for the new album like for you?
I think going into each record, we just kind of keep an open mind. So going, you know, his creative process, he just kind of works on the spot. And then after a certain amount of records, we kind of start shaping, okay, this is kind of the direction that we're headed in. This is the theme of my album. It took a while though. Like we were just being creative and working and having kind of a no pressure vibe that got us to, you know, kind of crafting it to where it got to right before it came out.
Was there one record that you could look to that sort of defined the sound of all the rest of the records?
From my perspective, I believe Trauma. When he recorded Trauma, I was like, okay, this is, you know, and then like somewhere around there he did Oodles and Noodles Babies.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, okay, now this is kind of a setting kind of the core of the album. And then him flipping these classics and like, in my opinion, like I think he really held it down.
Yeah.
There was a lot of criticism about him, you know, flipping samples. I don't understand what the big deal is.
No.
We're talking about hip hop and we're talking about records that I believe that it was kind of time for them to be, you know, redone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So there wasn't any discussion of that within the room.
No, and it happened kind of naturally. Like, it didn't happen on purpose. It just so happens, like, Cannon was like, I got this record.
Yeah.
And it was Trauma. You know, his producer, Nick Papps, was like, I flipped this Jay-Z sample, you know, and Street Runner was like, yo, I got this idea for, you know, this Biggie record that is perfect for your situation. And these records just kind of started coming in and, like I said, setting kind of this foundation and... It just happened naturally. It wasn't like we were like, we need to flip all these classic hip hop records, man.
Did Cannon send Trauma as part of a pack, or was that like he was like, this is the one for you?
I'm trying to remember. It's you know, we get flooded with so many records, and I know like I believe this one though was sent separately from the others because he did send at one point he was sending like 3 or 4 records at a time. You know, Cannon doesn't send you like 20 packs and stuff like that. Like he's very concise. Trauma, I do remember, just now that I'm thinking about it, was sent separately. It was like, you're going to love this record. Like, mm-hmm. This is a, you know, a familiar Mobb Deep, whatever. And not to mention, if you look back in Meek's history, go to YouTube, he's flipped that record before as a part of Bloodhounds.
Whoa.
So kind of go back and do your research on that. He's already murdered the record as, like, a young teenager.
What kind of hours does Meek like to... take in the studio?
We work a lot. Like, I mean, somebody asked me this the other day that knows nothing about the music business, like, well, why do you guys work late at night? I mean, it's just kind of, you know, he catches his vibe on a late night. Like, it's funny because we have like this running thing where he's like, all right, tomorrow we're gonna start early. He's like, yeah, all right, cool. And we always end up starting really kicking into gear like around 11, 12 o'clock, and he can run till all hours of the morning.
Man. What does your wife think about that?
Yeah, she loves it. She loves it. Yeah, that's the best schedule I can have as a husband. You know. So,
shout out to our friend Dallas Martin, too, who's been a part of all these projects.
And shout out to Dallas.
Does he go through just a million tracks to find just the few that he passes along?
Yeah, we actually work really well as a team. Like, Dallas brings, you know, packs of records. He goes in with all the hottest producers, the Take Keiths and the Wheezys. And, you know, Meek has Nick Papps is in-house. So we work with all our familiar go-to guys, and Dallas brings in his guys. So Meek, he goes through beats so quickly. You have to give him like hundreds of beats at a time. Because if you give him, you're like, yo, this, you know, unless, like I said, like the Cannon situation or, you know, the Hove record, the What's Free. For the most part, when we're really involved in the creative process, he goes through beats in like 2 to 3 seconds. Like, he just knows when to stop and listen in. And you know he's about to go in the booth when he plays a record back at least 4 or 5 times and starts kind of mumbling. He's like, all right, load it up.
Damn.
Was there any song that you like particularly argued for?
Oh, man. The intro.
The Phil Collins one.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily an argument. We just kind of got to this point because, as we all know, Meek is known for his intros. And we had a moment where we kind of were going back and forth between different ideas that he had that he was trying to get out. And he went back and forth with that idea for a while and finally just came back one day and was just like, I'm sticking with this. We gotta do this record. You know what I mean? So
does having the Dreams and Nightmares intro like hang over his head? Because it's crazy how that has become so much bigger than like.
Yeah, it's an anthem.
It is.
Yeah.
Does that sort of like, I don't know, weigh heavily on him? Like, I have to do as good or better than that for every intro going forward?
Honestly, you would think, but I honestly don't think that. I just think the way that he goes into working on an intro is what is going to captivate my fans. Or what is the listener going to appreciate when they first pop in the CD and they're riding or wherever they are, you know, to make them continue to listen to the rest of the record. And that's always been his approach. I think he touched on that yesterday. Is like a good friend of his coming up was like, when you got to focus on that intro because that's the first thing people hear. And that's why he's always had legendary intros, because he takes so much time to say, if I'm opening my record off with this, it has to be legendary.
Well, what does it mean to you to have yourself, like, to hear yourself get shouted out?
Man, it's when we're working and we're in the moment, you know, I'm just in such a place of, like, I'm just trying to focus on this record. I try not to let it get to me too much. But when I see the reaction from all the people that listen to the record, and I hear being shouted out on different broadcasts and things, and hear me clarify who I am when people bring my name up in an interview because of the shout out, like, that's just like,
wait, who did somebody confuse you for? Like Ted?
No. Nobody confused me for anyone. I'm just saying, like, for it to be recognized, like, who's the guy behind the boards?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, who is this guy Cruz you're shouting out, right? So
it's not just a nickname for Guru or something.
Yeah, no. And it reminded me of Guru. Like, Guru is you know, one of the guys that I really look up to in this game, and you know, kind of my sensei, if you will. And the first time he ever shouted out my name, I immediately thought about Guru, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm kind of getting to that point with Meek as an artist, the same way Jay was with Guru, that comfort level.
There's a shorthand for you guys, like, obviously, mm-hmm. when you're in the studio. Mm-hmm. Do you have that type of relationship with any other artist?
No. I can honestly say I work really well with all the artists that come through. I've gotten to a place where I'm really comfortable with, I don't care who's going to come in the room, I'm ready to record
them. Look at you already drumming up new business. You're like, hey, if anybody's listening out there, you know, I'm really good with anybody.
Break it, DWN.com. But honestly, I mean, because there was a point when I first started working with Meek, the project was DC3.
Yeah.
And I was nervous. I mean, you know, Fab would come in, Mace came in at one point, and I thought, like, I was so exhausted, actually. Like, we were up 2-3 days straight. I thought I was going to die, literally, from exhaustion.
At the board.
Yeah, but just long story short, like, I've gotten to that place where I'm confident with whoever comes in the room, I could record them and handle, you know, be able to handle the session.
What is, on this project, the feature that came in the latest?
It's kind of a tie between Hove and Drake, and simply because of, like, scheduling and then timing in terms of what record we were going to actually use. So once we solidified the What's Free record, it was obvious, because we were already, like, Hove was like, you know, him and Hove had been talking back and forth, and he's like, just send me whatever record you think is the one, and I'll choose between, you know, the two or three that you send.
And you already had the Ross verse.
We had the Ross verse. Actually, Ross, it sounds like a record for Ross, because I think, I don't know if this is, if you guys have heard this before, but, like, when you hear Ross, you think of Big.
Yeah.
Like, you remember, like, when he came out with Mastermind, I was like, that was the point where I was like, oh yeah, when he flipped that Big record, I was like, man, he's really got that vibe. So long story short.
And Puff was pushing that too.
Yeah. Right. So once we got the record for our album, it was like a no-brainer. You know, Meek and Hov went back and forth. Hov was real excited. He's like, my verse is long as shit. He gave him the heads up before we knew a bar of the verse, right? And then with the Drake record, Drake was on tour, you know, a lot of, during, like, the biggest part of our creation process. So they had been going back and forth about wanting to get in, but, you know, not having the time to be able to really create together and send ideas back and forth. So that record came in pretty late.
Is there anything that you get that you receive from any other engineers where you just look at it in the session and you're just like, I don't understand what exactly they have done here?
I won't call them, but it happens. It happens, you know?
This is messy.
Yeah, it's a little sloppy. A little sloppy. We can fix
it. And is there anything that you can look to, that you can point to on this album that you are particularly proud of from an engineering perspective, that you did here that maybe you hadn't done before?
Oh, man. I think, to be honest, the entire body of work is, I think, a testament to where I'm at with my confidence and, you know, working with Meek and doing different effects and things. Because Meek, one thing I really love about Meek is that he's gotten to a place of comfort with me that he allows me to be creative with things that I do, like when we get the track out, like things we do with the actual track and things, effects on his voice, arrangement sometimes with the beat. So just the overall body of work and working with Guru, he's so humble that, you know, if I had an idea, I'm like, man, that might need to be a drop right there. And he'd be like, here. He would get out of his chair, you know, go grab a coffee or something and just let me kind of mess around. And then he would just come back in and start where I left off.
Man.
What was the oldest song on the project?
Probably between like Trauma, Oodles and Noodles. Those are probably like some of the older records on the album.
And was there anything that dropped off and then came back in?
Like I said, the intro was kind of like an idea thing that we were going back and forth with, and finally solidified the, you know, with the Phil Collins idea. I can't really remember if anything kind of fell off.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had the idea for What's Free initially, and then, you know, Meek liked it for Ross, and then we were all kind of going back and forth, like, you know, we need that record.
Yeah.
And they had a, you know, they had a conversation and they put the play together with getting it back and getting Jay to get on it, and everybody was all on board. So it turned out amazing. Shout out to the whole MMG camp.
Where do you listen to the records just to test them out? Like, do you go out and do a car test? Do you go out and listen in like store-bought headphones?
Yeah, we listen everywhere because we think about it from a mind frame of the average listener. So we'll go in the AirPods, we'll go in, you know, listen through the actual speakers on the laptop, listen in the car. Meek's favorite testing place is the car. If it doesn't sound good in his car, there's a big problem.
In his car?
Yeah.
You don't find the ordinary car.
Right. So, like, if it sounds bad in his car, like, you imagine the system in his car, there's a big problem with the actual record. But, like, you know, we try to listen everywhere the average listener will so that they get the full experience. Because the studio, I mean, they do a good job if you kind of know the room of, you know, being able to figure out, okay, I need to work on tuning these things or turning this up or down. But for the most part, when you're like blasting records, they sound amazing in a big recording studio.
And what records did you listen to, like other artists' records, to try to like compare it sonically?
I always listen to Kendrick records, of course, like old Hove records, Migos, a lot of the stuff that Meek really likes to listen to, like the Lil Baby stuff and a lot of the newer stuff, so that we can stay competitive at the same time with like keeping the quality, overall quality of the record, you know, on a competitive scale.
Do you want the lower end to be more powerful, or do you want the voice to stick out, or is it possible to do both?
It has to be a balance.
Yeah.
Like Meek loves bass, but he's very, very critical about his voice. Like, that's one thing about Meek, is very much a stickler about, like, my voice doesn't sound right, or it's not crystal clear enough, or, you know, it's not cutting through properly. And then if it's not hitting properly on the low end, then, you know, that's always like a big fight, you know, to try to get that right.
By the way, we do have Meek's videographer here as well.
Shout out to Will.
Will Knows in the building. Yeah.
How you doing, Will Knows in the building?
Yo, what's happening?
Up, what's up, bros? How you doing?
Everything's good. Yo, I love Meek's energy. And, you know, even like on his radio run, I like how he went on, I think it was Power 106, and he was like, oh, I gained 20 pounds in jail. Like, he was just like, I ate.
Right, right,
you know, and I think it's like, it's nice to sort of put his whole personality out there. It's like, it's the true artist, you know? It's not just like, I'm going to give you this much and then like go retreat into the shadows. Yeah, this is like really him.
Yeah, exactly.
He's real transparent.
I think it's great.
For sure. Yeah, he's like, I mean, his energy and just him appreciating overcoming that situation. I mean, obviously it's always like a looming thing, unfortunately, until it's totally eradicated, but he's always been very appreciative of his stature, like his status in the game and like being successful. And you would think that with how he, you know, gives off this persona of like he's very flossy and things like that, that he's just like cocky. He's far from that. I mean, like he literally will tell us stories of how he'll wake up and be like, damn, like this is really my house, or those are really my cars in the driveway. Or like, you know, when the album was about to drop, he's calling everybody like, what's the energy like? Like, tell me, I need to feel it. Like, that's I need to know what's going on. I mean, super humble, super appreciative. And I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, yeah, it's just I love that about him, you know?
Yeah. He's like, how I describe him is like, he almost wakes up with like fresh eyes all the time. You know what I mean? You know, like a little kid, the world is just magical. Like I've heard him speak so many times on like, this was like years ago, we'll be in the Bahamas for like the third time, you know what I mean? And it was like, yo man, I couldn't sleep last night. I'm just up. I can't believe I'm in the Bahamas. I can't believe I'm here. You know what I mean? Like he'll just tell talk and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's just one thing I noticed about him throughout my time spent with him. Like he always just like, so he's grateful for what he has. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we'll make a little video of the crib that he's in. You know, shoot a video, whatever it is. And it's like, wow, Will, it's like, I can't believe I'm living like this. You know what I mean? Like, isn't this crazy?
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? But, yeah, but he's been doing that for so, he lived that way for so long. But it's still it never fresh
gets
to
old.
Him.
Yeah, never gets old. Well, and like, he'll do one thing that's like hilarious to me to this day is like, he'll take off his jewelry and put it on whoever he's talking to. And be like, let me see how this shit hit.
He's
like, damn, my shit hit like that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. He'll put the flashlight on it so the diamonds could dance a little bit.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Yeah. I have a picture actually when I was in the studio at Rock the Mic where I had like chains
all the shit's on.
Oh
my God.
And it was him like, yo, damn, that shit looks like that.
Yeah. He did it to the Puma. We was at a Puma game. They were playing Puma maybe 3 weeks ago, and they like literally put all their chains on me. I'm like walking around with a hunchback.
When cool, when Meek came out, was there any difference you could tell in him that was either positive or negative? Like, or was it the same guy who went in all those months earlier?
I mean, when he came out, he was super positive. Like, more positive than I've ever seen him personally. You know what I mean? Like, I just opened up my phone, and there was a massive group chat going on already.
Yeah, right? That's a fact.
And it's just, he took a selfie of himself with, like, the biggest cheese on his face. And like,
we're like, who is this?
Yeah, I mean, we were like, who is this? You know what I mean? Like, so he came out with, like a brand new mindset, like, just all the negativity, anything with that in the past just went away.
Yeah.
This is my new chance to begin. It was like, yeah, it came out with amazing energy for sure.
Yeah.
How long have you been with Meek?
I've been with Meek probably 6 months prior to Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Do you hold that over years? Cruise?
No.
He does.
Yeah.
He's like, I knew him first, bro.
Yeah. And then I met Cruise in the studio. I'm like, who's this guy right here? I don't know about this guy.
And how has your job evolved in terms of like how much he wants you to be around or how much he wants you to capture when you're in any given room?
He pretty much gives me free range to do whatever I want. You know, obviously he wants me to be with him as much as possible.
And you could always cut back.
Yeah. Sometimes I need time to myself to handle my own things. But then when he needs me, I'm right back on board. But it's never been like we don't need Will I don't want to go over here. You know what I mean? So we're definitely on deck for each other for sure.
Were you there for? I'm gonna guess you were. Summer Jam this year.
Summer Jam, yes.
When they had the big video and the helicopter sort of arrival and
then the dirt bikes onto the stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
That was amazing. You know what I mean? The video, him getting on the dirt bikes. I remember I was being on stage. I got hit by some pyrotechnics almost. I was burning my eyebrows out. You know what I mean?
Damn.
And nobody gave me a warning. You know what I mean? But yeah. But it was crazy. Yeah, it's been a burn. Yeah.
Are you ever stopped, by the way, going into a building?
Oh, all the time.
And you have to be like, no, I'm part of the crew.
Yeah. All the time.
Oh yeah, that's
yeah, all the time. It's like almost 100% chance it's gonna happen. You know what I mean? Like any one of us would be like, you know what I mean? It's gonna happen. It's just part of the game. You know?
Yeah.
You have to finesse your way into the door, talk to security, call a couple people, but yeah, we always get in. Yeah.
What was the best filmed moment from the from putting together this album?
I would probably say L.A. Right, Cruz?
Yeah, L.A.
The L.A. mansion where we recording. That was crazy. It was a party every night, pretty much. It was wild.
Do you prefer when it's a party atmosphere in the studio?
My preference is just more of a low key vibe, but
guess what?
That's not my call. Sometimes we do. I mean, honestly, yeah. Meek loves that environment, but I personally feel like he does his best verses, his best work. When it's more low key.
Was the Uptown record done with a lot of people there, or was that like?
Yeah, that was in like in a party vibe, and that came out amazing.
It's a great record.
Yeah, it is. It's fun.
Did Fab do that in the studio, or was that something where he emailed the verse? Oh,
no,
he came.
He was in the studio. Yeah, he had been in the studio probably for like a couple days, just kind of hanging out. Like one of the things that I missed about being in New York, because when we first started, we were doing DC3 and Rock the Mic Studios. And so, like, that New York vibe,
oh my God,
is incredible. Like, you get all the New York artists coming through, just hanging out. 9 times out of 10, they're not getting on any records. They're just there just to hang out and kick it. And but, yeah, Fab had come through a few times, and it just fit. You know, so, yeah, that was done in-house.
So what is it about L.A. that was special then? Like if this,
or did you just like the house?
No, and yeah. But by the way, like Meek has been
it's a long driveway going up to
New York was my favorite.
Well, no, because Meek has been like, you know, like on his radio run talking about how this is a real like East Coast record,
and
I've spent a lot of time East Coast, like specifically for this record. Yeah. But L.A. was your most favorite
part? Because we're so used to recording in the studios. That I think Meek felt like he wanted to do something different just to get a different vibe, So they had this massive mansion and you could just get lost in it for days. And, you know, for me, for my work, I had my own little editing office area, you know what I mean? So he would create music and we would create content at the same time. So it was rather than being at hotels and then meeting up and then trying to, you know what I mean? So I thought that was dope. Yeah.
Was this a house with a studio in it, or did you guys just
put the studio together
in just a room?
Yeah, that was a process. Once we finally found the house we really liked, we, you know, working with the label and with Dallas and a couple of contacts I have in the audio world, we put together. Shout out to Dave Malapour at Augsburger. He helped us rent this amazing speaker system, and we had, you know, basically a studio setup right there in that
house. So you see a lot of these guys, you know, from the biggest artists to anybody, can just set up with, like, you know, a shield that goes around any microphone that you can put anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Did you make sure that, like, that room sounded the way you wanted it to sound first?
Yeah, we deaded the closet. And put up gobos, which are basically like for soundproofing. They're like on wheels, you know, and put those up and put up some blankets. Just deaded it as much as possible so that we wouldn't catch any of the noise from the room or
just the vibes.
Yeah, kept
the vibes right.
Yeah.
Kept the vibes right, you know, the yondens.
Yeah. When did you find out that the record was going to drop in late November?
We knew, the end of October, I think.
So was there, like, a rush to get everything done, or did you feel like...
I mean, there's
like...
always a rush. I mean, honestly, because, like, Meek is very, very particular. And one thing I'll say is, like, I've grown to trust him more and more with his own music. Because where we worry more about, like, the stress from if we set a deadline, like, the label, like, it has to be turned in tomorrow. And Meek... if he's not ready, he's not ready, you know? And so, you know, a lot of us were kind of just making sure that he had everything he wanted in this album for it to finally get handed in. So shout out to all of Atlantic and Rock Nation for, you know,
moving everything back and helping him, you know, keep this legendary rollout that he had lined up. Because it definitely went down to the wire, for sure.
What is the realest conversation that either of you was, like, witness to or part of that you guys can talk about?
That we can talk about?
So many. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I think me personally, like, man, there's so many because, you know, Meek is very... like he's a real dude, man. Like when I love kind of like at the end of our projects, him really telling you how much he appreciates your work and everything else. And, you know, on this record, of course, the shout out and us like kind of just celebrating and having moments where, like, you know, more so laughs than anything, than like really serious stuff. But yeah, we definitely have those moments where we just kind of are like, man, I can't wait for, you know, for people to hear this, and, you know, just talking about records and the recording process and things like that.
Yeah. And then also, like, what's one way that that you guys like blow off steam, other than, I mean, like, obviously a lot of people like paintball or like, you know,
ping pong or whatever.
Yeah, like, he loves ping pong. Yeah. So like, what's one way that like he was just like killing time with you guys around, or with you guys?
I mean, in the studio.
Yeah.
He loves to play chess. So he'll play chess all night.
He's a master.
Yeah,
chess.
He's great. He's great at chess. So he'll sit there and play chess with like everyone.
Does that mean that you guys are better at chess now than you were?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Yeah, no, he'll look to me like, "Well, can you play chess?" I'm like, "Oh man, I gotta go learn how to play chess."
I wish he played chess with Ellen.
That
would have been crazy. But I love that they did the ping pong thing.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
You know what? You guys should create some type of YouTube channel where celebrities play chess.
Chess?
Yeah, right?
You heard it here first.
Make sure you put me and Cruz in that.
Well, wait, but, who else is good at chess?
You'd be surprised. A lot of rappers play chess because apparently...
I'm very surprised right now. Well, yeah.
I don't remember who was
playing. Remember a lot.
I would be in the studio. I'm like...
Because...
Wait, is O'Malley good?
P-Mon is really good.
Okay.
His best friend.
Yeah P-Mon is like his...
A lot of people that have been to jail, rappers, are good at chess.
Okay.
Because, you know, they play chess, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as far as I can remember, a lot of rappers are really good at chess.
Who else would just stop by, like, you know, I don't know, celebrities or athletes or anything, just to listen or just like soak in what you guys were about?
Man, we had a lot. This album, everybody. I was gonna say, yeah, this album I think was kind of like one of the top moments in terms of all the people that you can like kind of go back. I was doing this the other day. I was like, man, we had some legends come through. We had Swiss come through regularly. You know, of course, like Fab and all the New York cats that were
just real quick
through.
that Swiss record off the EP,
Miladelphia.
Oh, Miladelphia.
Oh my god,
and it wasn't even a Swiss production, but just the energy they
right,
had,
right? Yeah, 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 yeah. Was
incredible.
Anyway, so Swiss dropped by,
Swiss. We had Cano come through. Harden is like a regular.
Wait, so Robinson Cano?
Yeah, Robinson Cano.
Yeah, the new New York Met. Gotcha. Yep.
James Harden.
Yep.
Deion Waiters comes through.
Oh, shout out to Deion Waiters. Yeah. Philly.
Ed Sheeran was a big one.
Just to listen, or?
Well, it was listening, and then like they worked on some things. We can't really get
too much
into, but
that's
like
a Jason Davis collaboration. Know,
yeah. Yeah, that's definitely. Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Jason. That's a heavy, heavy Jason collab.
Big conversations. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like they had good conversations.
By the way, Ed Sheeran, really good at chess, went to jail a bunch of times.
By the way, isn't it amazing that like no one said anything either about like any of the records that they were working on? Just like everyone who came to visit just like listened, kept their mouth shut, and kept it moving.
Yeah, like J. Cole, like, you know, came in. They had an amazing talk. Like J. Cole kind of was breaking down his obsession with production and what he believes it takes to get your album to be appreciated on another level. And I think, you know, we took heed to that because one thing that Meek had never had on his albums was post-production. We kind of just take the records as they are and put them out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with this record, not necessarily giving full credit, I mean, shout out to Cole, that was like a great conversation they had, but you know, that was one thing that Dallas particularly was like, man, you got to do some post-production, like with like a Terrence Martin or a 1500 or whatever. And once we got Guru in, Guru was like, yo, what are we doing post-production wise? Like without even having the initial conversation, just like knowing that that's something that they do.
Yeah.
But how did that change the actual album for you guys?
Man, it really turned up certain records. Like 1500 helped in particular with Trauma. Mm. They helped with Respect the Game, Championships, and Cold Hearted too. Mm. And I know it doesn't sound like a lot of the album, but if you listen to it before and what they did to it, just to kind of turn it up a little more, it was amazing just to hear him on records that had that much attention to detail.
And who does the mastering?
Colin Leonard in Atlanta. Shout out to Sing Mastering, yeah.
And what did you push for there?
We trust Colin. I mean, Colin is responsible for a lot of records that are coming out right now on the mastering side. He did Hov and B's record. He's done all the Migos stuff. He's responsible for a lot. He did Wins and Losses, which was our first full project together.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to Dallas, because he's one thing I love about Dallas is like when it comes to mix master, he lets you know me and Meek kind of take the reins on it, you know, and just trust that we're gonna get the right person for the job. So for the past couple records, he's allowed us to be like, yo, we're gonna get this guy, even though he might not be the popular vote. Which I mean, can't say that for this one. Guru's a legend, but
yeah.
You know,
he's okay.
There are certain people that are like always the go-to guys that we are like, you know, we want to try something different, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, no shade on anybody, but just for what Meek looks for, we just need, you know, basically what Guru brought to the table. Somebody that comes in that's humble, that could take criticism and like, you know, feedback about things that we want without attitude about how many different passes you have to do and, you know, have all that pushback and whatnot. That's always irritating and uncomfortable having to deal with, you know, trying to perfect your album.
Do you think that his positivity and his just whole attitude where it is now helped shape this record?
I think so for sure. And I think, like I said before, his stance on justice reform and him, you know, being more active with speaking out against these things and taking kind of a more conscious route in terms of, you know, his stance on those issues really helped kind of, I guess, him strategize how he was going to come back. Because he always said, like, I'm going to be Meek Mill. Because when we first came out and there was all this press and him doing all this, like, CNN and all that, it was like, man, how are we going to make an album with you talking about... ass and money and you know what I mean? Like he was just like, dude, I'm gonna be me, but I'm gonna find a way to explain what I've been through and get all this stuff off my chest. And I think he did an amazing job of balancing both worlds.
Just want to take a second, guys, to remind you that as the holidays grow closer, this December, there's only one place for you to go and get your gifts. It's thereal.com/shop.
JaggedEdgeThrill.com.
It's thereal.com/shop. Grab a t-shirt, grab a rhyme book, the book, the physical lined notebook that we put out with original It's The Real material. It is available everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, itsthereal.com.
Yeah, writing is still cool, guys.
Go get that today. Surprise your friends and family with one or two copies.
It fits perfectly in a stocking.
Go get yours today. Visit itsthereal.com/shop and get a t-shirt or a sweatshirt. Get a sweatshirt. Why not?
Yeah,
it's sweatshirt
cares?
Weather. Itsthereal.com.
Life is short. Spend lots of money on us.
Itsthereal.com. And now back to the podcast.
But where are you originally from?
I'm from Oklahoma. Originally.
Where in Oklahoma?
Altus.
Where is that?
You don't know?
It's, yeah, right. Never heard of that one?
I didn't even know that.
It's almost, it's like close to an hour outside of Oklahoma City.
Which way?
I don't remember. It's been so long since I've been back there. But
yeah,
I started out in Oklahoma.
What'd your folks
as a
do?
Military brat.
Oh, all right.
Just, you know, my biological father was in the Air Force, and my mom was extremely young when they first met. And once I was probably like 4 or 5, they broke it off. And my stepdad, she met my stepdad in Oklahoma. He got transferred to Colorado. So we moved to Colorado.
He was also in the service?
Yes, he was in the Army. So we moved to Colorado, and then once he was honorably discharged, we moved to Atlanta. I went to high school and college in Atlanta.
Where'd you go to college?
Georgia State University.
Okay, yep. Yeah.
Everybody's always like, the Bulldogs.
Bulldogs, yeah.
Look it up. Just Google, like, you know, Georgia State University.
Yeah.
So, went to Georgia State and then ended up in Orlando at Full Sail for a year.
Yep.
Yep.
After I, like, quit job at Verizon.
Oh, wow. Doing what?
Doing, like, sales. I was doing really well.
Oh.
My own spot. I broke a lease, which just recently fell off my credit, by the way.
Wait, so somewhere along the line you get into music and I want to be a part of something.
Yes, and that was definitely in Atlanta. Like, the culture in Atlanta, what I was a big fan of was like the whole Deaf Poetry Jam movement, and that's where my company Break It Down kind of started, was, you know, getting in contact with certain poets and putting together showcases. I would like record one, shout out to Abyss, who's like, you know, a very, reputable spoken word artist out of Atlanta from Detroit. And, you know, started there, like just kind of, you know, working with these guys and getting, I was always curious about how you make music sound like radio ready. So I started with like this small little inbox, you know, for Pro Tools,
yeah,
and was working in the crib, and I barely knew how to find the record button and get the level right. And, you know, so the recording sound horrible, you know, but I just was so interested in it. And I was like, you know what, I need to figure out how to really do this. And I got so intrigued and captivated by it that I dropped everything and went to Full Sail. I was like, I'm going to learn this.
I just want to be clear. You got into music by working with spoken word artists.
Basically, yeah. Because I was like a
who
big
have no
fan.
Music
behind them. No, listen. These guys are actually very lyrical. Like this.
Yeah, but they don't have music behind them.
Yeah, well, that's where I was like making, you know, I would make beats and.
Oh,
you know,
got
I
it.
Kind of skipped that. Sorry about that. But like, yeah.
You were a mashup artist.
Yeah. So I was like making beats and trying to get into, you know, I was always obsessed with like Primo Beats and Pete Rock and Dilla, and how do they make that sound? At the time, you know, Kanye was making like these soulful beats. So I started off kind of with that type of sound and always experimenting with that. So that was where, you know, I've always been a huge fan of music, by the way. Like, my stepdad really put me on to a very diverse music taste.
So when you moved to Atlanta, though, the sound down there moved into like the crunk era.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're on this spoken word tip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was,
were you like, no, I still fuck with Lil Jon, and I, you know.
Of course. You have to have like that ratchet side and fun side. I've never been like a totally serious person. You have to, like, you know, you got to live life. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
So you go to Georgia State for a little bit, but then you decide to drop everything and go to Full Sail.
Yeah. So I actually finished from Georgia State. Like, I went.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, after 5 years.
With it, yeah, well, that's fine. What's the
There's
rush?
No rush.
Yeah. What'd you major in there?
English. I started off as a business management, and it just wasn't working out. It wasn't what I thought it would be. Switched to English, and it was way more open because I could take like movie courses and different types of courses. So.
But Full Sail University is strictly for music and production.
It's entertainment based.
Yeah,
sure.
All of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you moved down to Orlando.
Yes, for a year.
And you just dive right in.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, it was like a real sacrifice. I mean, I actually, I took all the money that I had. I drained my 401k. I had a couple dollars there. And a good friend of mine, shout out to Lamar, went with me. He dropped what he had going on, and he's like, let's do it. Like, I support what you're doing, and I do want to, you know, try to figure out my way in music as well. And so we both went together. We got an apartment, basically no furniture in the apartment for the entire year. We had, like, a mattress in each room and a futon frame, because I used the mattress from the futon frame. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was a real grind.
Yeah.
It was a real grind.
And by the way, like, honestly, shout out to your friend who went down and did it with you, because you know, as we know, like working together, there's something to be said for not going into something alone. Like you having someone else to lean on, like when times are rough.
Yeah.
That and when times are good, that means the world.
Yeah. And I almost actually walked away because when we were trying to get into the program and get all the funding that we could get, there was some pushback. And I remember just being like, you know, forget about it. You know, like one thing that I've had to work on over the years is kind of my patience level. And I was just ready to just leave. I'm like, all right, we're out. And my boy is like super finesse king. And he's like, give me 2 seconds. So then like after probably like 10 or 15 minutes, I'm in the office with one of the people in financial aid. And we're talking about how she played lacrosse or something like that or tennis. And he's like, yeah, you know, and they became friends. However, you know, like he's slick.
Yeah.
And so like he got us a meeting.
Yeah,
shout out to Bosco, Lamar. He got us a meeting with one of the counselors there that got us our paperwork and got us in the door with the crazy scholarship too. The president found out what we had going on and my story, and I was quoting kind of their motto about, you know, something about basically, if you have a dream that you're serious about, we're gonna take your dream serious.
Wow.
And so like we just were preaching that, like, man, this is what we really want to do.
Yeah, you were a dream chaser early.
Yeah, I was gonna say, did Meek like steal your shit?
Early. No.
That'll be the viral thing.
Yeah. So once he caught wind, he gave us this amazing scholarship to kind of cover the balance that we needed and got us in the door, and we just took it from there.
So what kind of stuff were you doing in that year?
They're very hands-on over there. Like we were like right in studio environments. Like they give you a couple months where you have to do basic classroom stuff and book work, and but after a couple months you're hands-on, you're on the board, you're doing patches, you're setting up mics, doing mic placement, you're having courses of like getting you familiar with Pro Tools and shortcut keys and things like that. So they make you pretty sharp. If you take it seriously, you know, you'll get to a point where when you get into a studio, you're good to get started.
Yeah.
Who else was down there at the same time that you were? Anybody that's come out of it?
No, but what's funny is like a lot of my peers are like, yeah, I went to Full Sail too. Like shout out to E-Mix and
Alex Tume.
Yeah,
do you think people were lying about going to Full Sail?
I don't know. I don't know why you would lie about that. Because like all you do is you come out of the program like broke and like, you know, with all this ambition and whatnot, like, you know.
So when you graduate from Full Sail,
mm-hmm.
do you go back home?
No, actually, I took a major risk and initially I knew I wanted to be in New York. I was dead set on New York. A lot of my favorite music came out of New York. And
did you know anyone up here?
I did not. I knew I had a cousin that actually lives like a couple blocks from you guys.
Whoa.
By the way. Yeah. Shout out to Morgan. I would initially I went with my grandma in Connecticut and would just like take the train.
Yeah.
You know, from New Haven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Right.
That, so like when I was initially trying to figure out like, all right, how am I going to make this transition to New York? That was how I did it. I was there in Connecticut. You know, obviously I had to do some work. So it was like a couple of months, like it was during the wintertime actually. And I had 2 jobs. I was working like Express and Toys R Us or some shit. I just needed to get my money up.
Yeah.
So I stacked my money up. And was it hard to move to New York?
When you're working at Express,
yeah,
are you wearing like all Express stuff? So you're looking 100%. Like you're going to like
100%
a shitty club.
Yeah. No, I look super. Yeah, I look. Yeah, exactly.
By the way,
I used to love Express though.
Oh no, I used to love
remember
it when
you
I was
could
like
flip the collar up. And it was a different color on the other side. Come on, man.
Yep.
Like, Express.
Yeah.
I definitely wore Express in like middle school, and it's like a very sophisticated look for a 13-year-old.
Jeff looked like the real young teacher. Yeah.
I used to go to the club. You see guys with the same exact shirt.
With the same shirt. Yeah. Everybody went to Express at one point.
You opened your friend's closet.
I don't know what happened, but we probably wore it out in our time.
One time, our friend Shinsuke had his 21st birthday, and we were living up in Westchester, and we drove down to the city for his birthday, and just we didn't realize this when we all met up with each other, like me and Jeff and Greg and Greg's drummer at the time, mm-hmm. and we all were wearing polos, but all in different colors, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I had the yellow one, Jeff had the white one, Greg had the red, you know, yeah. And but like, so we're all like, well, this is hilarious at this point. Yeah. Then we get down to the club and the we all walk together to the bouncer, and the bouncer's like, I'm gonna do you a favor and let you up one by one.
Oh.
And we're like, all right, well, thanks. Yeah. Anyway, so when you came to the city, did you find it hard to navigate?
Yeah, it was overwhelming because I knew New York from the movies. Because I don't, my mom says I had been here as like an infant, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I had no recollection of that,
yeah,
that trip.
Yeah,
yeah.
But so I remember it from the movie. So it was like overwhelming. You see, you know, this big, fast-paced city. I remember being scared of like the traffic on the street and just seeing people just dart across the street. Like what we used to think was jaywalking. You know
right.
what I mean? So like. It took a lot of getting used to and figuring out the train routes. I took a lot of like unnecessary stops.
Headed to Queens for
for no reason.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But
and when do you get situated in a studio?
So that's an interesting story, and I thought about if I was gonna like give the full thing, but I think I can get away with it because I'll explain in a second. So by the time we get settled in New York, the girl I was seeing at the time, we were in Ridgewood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in between, so it's like Brooklyn and
Brooklyn,
Queens.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. So it was like,
it's the most like hard to get to like you know area of the city. Yes, it's exactly Hov and Nas. Yes.
So it was like right off of like Seneca, off the L line. So I start off there. She has this internship at Sony. And Roc Nation at the time had their office in the Sony building. So I don't know how far you guys go back, but you might even know about all this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I remember her talking to some of her people at the office and telling them that, you know, I was looking for a studio because I was getting shut down, believe it or not. I mean, it was like, was not easy because I think I had the wrong approach. I was like a little bit too confident in certain places. I won't shout these studios out because, mm-hmm. I mean, like, they did me
dirty.
Super dirty at the time, like, tried to crush me. But, like, I would be like, yeah, they'd be like, how comfortable are you with Pro Tools on a scale of 1 to 10? I say an 8. And they were expecting me to be like, oh, maybe a 5, maybe a 4. And I'm like, nah, I want you guys to know I'm confident that I could, like, so whatever. I had the wrong approach and was getting shut down by a lot of studios. And so, you know, I'm consistent, so I wasn't going to just give up. Like, I came here for a reason. I'm going to get to it. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to take the same approach as I took being in corporate and shining in a corporate environment. Why not do that for something I'm trying to do independently for myself? So,
shouts to Express.
Shout out to Express and Toys R Us.
Yeah.
RIP.
Yeah. So, how many of the studios that you originally went to are still around, by the way?
Oh, man. The one I started in is not there anymore.
Yeah.
The ones that I went around to, they're still there. That's why I'm not saying that.
All right.
Yeah. But so to finish the story, so she's kind of letting people know, like, yeah, he's looking for a studio or whatever. And Roc Nation around the corner gets wind of it. And it's like, yeah, I think the Roc Nation studio is looking for an intern. And so I remember this particular day I was going through a list of like the top 50 things to do in New York because I was like trying to keep my mind off of like being depressed with not getting into studios and stuff.
Walk so the
like,
High Line.
Yeah, so I'm like, the next thing on the list was like Empire State, and I get a phone call like, yo, this is Candace from 4040 Club. I work at, you know, Rock the Mic. We want to get you in as an intern. How quickly can you start? And like, I think I was already kind of en route when she was saying that. Like, I could do the Empire State later.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's only 6 blocks away.
Yeah,
you gotta get both in.
So my first day in Rock the Mic, there's a Neo session and there's a Mary J session. Like, you know.
Yeah, just normal shit.
Yeah.
Shit. Just like Full Sail.
So like,
did you bring your fedora?
No, I didn't. I don't know what I had. I don't remember what I was wearing. I know it was like probably regular.
Express.
Probably Express.
Yeah.
You're right. I didn't want to say. So it's Mary J, it's Neo, and it's like this brand new intern, you know, and of course, like as an intern, you're doing the food runs, you're cleaning up and things like that.
But you're an 8 in Pro Tools, what the hell?
Yeah, I'm like an 8 in Pro Tools, but I'm going and getting, you know, Negril orders and stuff. So
That I mean, was super fast. But like, I remember that first day, I just, the etiquette I learned from Full Sail was like, you don't use your phone while you're in the studio. So like, literally while I was in the studio, I wasn't using my phone, and the girl I was with at the time was like hitting me up, like, is everything all right? Are you good? And I'm not responding because I was told not to use the phone in the studio.
He's dead.
So it was a wrap. After that was like kind of the decline for that or whatever. Like, because I was very serious about, you know, shining in the studio, and I appreciated the opportunity. I wanted to max out on it. So yeah, it just, from there, it was like most of my time was there. I mean, I stayed there.
Who were some of the artists that came through?
Man, and I had this wish list of artists that I would tell people while I was at Full Sail, and they all ended up coming through Rock the Mic. Like, it was J. Cole was just starting to really pop with the warm-up tapes and stuff like that. And he was working on Sideline Story. He came through and did a couple weeks there. Ryan Leslie came through. I was a huge fan of, like, his Making Beats videos and stuff. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, so... worked on some stuff with him as an assistant. Santi Gold came through. Jesse J. Who else? Common was huge. Like, I'm a huge Common fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
spoken
Common.
Word.
Yeah. You see?
Yeah.
See how it all kind of like comes back around? Dilla, spoken word. Boom, I'm with Common. So, Common. Man, Chris Martin from Coldplay, we played pool together.
Whoa.
Who won?
He smoked.
Yeah.
He smoked.
He went to jail.
Yeah.
No, it was British boys, yeah.
Chris Martin. Of course, Hove would come through like on some like super ninja shit. Who else?
So were you living your dream? Were you just as an intern, you're just like, this is...
I was on cloud nine. I mean, my relationship was like in the toilet, but like I was super... excited and like just ready to maximize this opportunity, and I never let myself get so hyped where like I would ruin it by like basically just kind of feeling like, yeah, I'm in the mix and I'm taking pictures and stuff. I always had like the proper etiquette, and you know, that's one thing that Guru speaks on to this day. He's like, you're the one person that made it out of that studio the way that you did, besides shout out to Marcos, Rihanna's engineer, Marcos Tovar. He came out of Rock the Mic as well.
Yeah.
So we're the only two like really like that did it, you know, big. So shout out to OG Juan and Dez.
Oh, that's, man.
Yeah.
I give them like full credit for putting me in that environment without even having like a proper interview. Like, I don't think Candace asked me two questions. She just looked at my resume and was like, can you go now? And I was like, yeah, I thought I was going to have to go through all this like Q&A, but it was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, what was on your resume? It was just that you had gone to
It was
to
pretty
sale?
Shitty. Like, I had my uncle, he knows nothing about music, but he's like really good at putting resumes together. And, you know, I had like, I forget what the opening line was. And then I had, you know...
Wasn't it just Anthony Cruz?
Basically, yeah, because it's hard to stretch music stuff. You know, I had to, like, put bullet points underneath Full Sail just show, like, all the music stuff I did, because everything else was, like, Verizon, Toys R Us,
proficient
Coca-Cola.
In, Pro Tools and GarageBand.
Yeah. And I graduated college.
Yeah, so. English degree.
Yeah. So it was
lit.
Yeah. I mean, they just were like, go. I mean, because, you know, interns... What the way they look at it is like, we're giving you an opportunity, and you know, what you do with it is what you do with it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for sure.
Yeah.
So what was the big breakthrough moment in terms of like learning what a professional environment was like for you?
Actually, what I learned, contrary to what I learned in school, was it's a lot more, it's very serious. In terms of like where, especially the engineer is like kind of the captain of the whole ordeal. Like, you run the whole vibe of the session. You know, if you're too slow, if you know, you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know certain shortcuts, if you don't know how to work through a problem, you can totally ruin a session. So I learned a lot of that from a lot of the greats that came through. Like I said, like Coldplay's engineer, Marcos, Juice, who's now Nikki's engineer, Guru was there regularly. Stargate was in the B room. So, like, imagine all the people that were coming in and out through Stargate.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so a lot of what I learned is that be yourself, but keep that professional aspect as well. Like, keep it, you know, stay very focused and serious on your craft, but just be yourself when you're dealing with the actual artist. You know what I mean?
Did you
like,
ever...
Don't be a tight ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's people that are, like, very, like... and you're like, bro, just relax. You're making the person uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Was there a take that you ever lost?
I will say, like, there was a take that I've lost before, even with Meek. But, like, he doesn't have time to, like, go back and forth with you, like, because everything's in his head.
Yeah.
So it's like, come on, let's just do it again.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, definitely.
Do you hit him with the, like, critical take? Yo, I think you could do it better.
No, I don't cover it up at all. I'm like, yo, I fucked up. I'm sorry. And he's like, come on, let's get it back. You know, like, let's hurry up because I'm in the zone. You know, so.
Has anybody ever spilled a drink on your board?
Oh, man. No, but there's been so many close calls. Like, I actually do a really good job at keeping that from happening because, like, as soon as I see a drink, I'm like, yo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, like, Meek will see, like, if I'm across the room, he'll see me looking at, like, yo, get that off the board or yeah. whatever. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. When do you meet Young Guru?
I meet Guru early on. The first time I met Guru, if I'm not mistaken, is when Jay did the record Glory.
Mm. Wow.
If I'm not mistaken, you know, he could correct me if I'm wrong, but like it was somewhere around then. And they do Glory and I'm like overwhelmed because it's like, this is Guru, this is a Jay-Z record. So I probably had like the dumbest questions in the world, but I did want to ask him something just to be like, yo, I'm an engineer too. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it went over that well. But Guru's a really, really cool, humble guy.
Yeah.
Like, after a while of us, you know, a couple times of him coming in and out, I kind of got a vibe of stuff that he likes. So I would like have his coffee and like, I got him like this big box of like, what is it? He gets Backwoods.
Oh, yeah.
So I got him like, I ordered like a jumbo box of Backwoods for him and shit. And like, you know, we did a Jay Electronica session together, not on purpose. It was
Wait,
like,
Jay Electronica did noon on purpose?
No. Yeah. Of course, he came through, you know, ready to work. And Guru.
That doesn't sound like him.
If anybody that knows Guru, do not let him fall asleep. Like, he gets, like, he's like a sleeping giant. Like, literally a sleeping giant. Like, it's really hard to wake him up. Like, we had moments we were doing the mix, and he's like, Cruz, I'm going to chill for, like, 15 minutes. Don't let me fall asleep. And it was, like, some horror movie shit. You're like, oh, my God. So,
Goo.
Yeah. So, during the Jay Electronica session, they're working on this record, and Jay Electronica was really antsy to get this thing out. It was the... what was the name of the record? It was like World War III or something like that. It was the record he did with Prodigy.
Mm.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's not.
All right.
Jeff will look it up. Yeah.
It's slipping my mind.
Yeah.
So long story short, Guru goes and like, I'm going to chill for a second. I'm going to lay down. And Jay is like, I feel like the record's done at this point because Prodigy had done his hook and everything. So he's like, all right, I'm going to go lay down for a second. And he just like he passed out. So JLX getting like antsy. So I went in and did like he was like, yo, you engineer, right? And I'm like, yeah. But I'm in my mind, I'm like, this is a Guru session. Like, you're asking me to do a Guru session. So I didn't want to tell him no. We couldn't get Guru to wake up. So I was like, all right, cool. I just went in and tweaked some things. He really liked what I was doing. Erykah Badu had a late night that night. She came through and gave her input and feedback and was telling me certain things that, you know, I should do in terms of tweaking his vocal and certain things like that. And we bounced it and he put it out while Guru was sleeping.
Oh, my God.
And Guru, like, always says, like, yo, you held me down that session.
Wow.
But he did want to, like, go in and do his thing to
it, whatever. Yeah.
But, like, he appreciates that it went the way it did because Jay Electronica was happy. Everybody was happy. And he was just like, all right, cool. Like, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
By the way, it was called Call of Duty.
That's there you go. Call of Duty. Not, sorry about
yeah,
that. My
different
fault.
Video
it's
games.
It's been so long.
Yeah. The first time we ever met Young Guru, we were at Jay Electronica's signing announcement to Rock Nation at the box downtown, right? So we're outside and everyone's waiting to get in, and we look to our right, and I'm looking and I'm like, oh my God, it's Young Guru.
Yeah.
And so we don't say anything, and he looks over at us and strikes up a cigarette, and he goes, y'all gonna act like y'all not It's the Real? And we're just like, you're Young Guru.
That's like a guru moment. He's so humble, man.
It was the greatest, humble, and he still is the greatest person ever. Yeah.
And by the way, just to clarify, we were not going to act like we weren't It's the Real. So we were called out on it.
Yeah. So when you are situated there and you're known to be more than an intern now, you're known to be like an actual working engineer who knows his Pro Tools at least at an 8, more, you know, maybe a 9, whatever.
Yeah.
Ask your uncle.
Yeah.
did you think that there was life beyond Rock the Mic?
Yes. And actually, OG Juan was very confident, and he would always tell me, like, if you know, because I heard Marcos's story. And he told him, like, yo, he's like, if you fuck with me, you're going to make it big, right? And so I remember recounting that story back to OG, and he's like, yeah, like, that's how it goes. Like, if you stick to working hard and, you know, you're loyal, something's going to pop for you, you know? And that's when, you know, things kind of took off with, you know, Meek comes through and that whole thing.
So you meet Meek under what circumstances?
Actually, at the time, I'm working in between Rock the Mic and 4040 Club.
Mm-hmm.
And
so Will is there.
Tenure.
Yeah.
Because he was Will there six months Meek. Before you.
Yeah, for sure. Will is definitely with Meek, 100%. He's actually documented my entire journey with Meek.
That's why he was there. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's more so of the crew story.
He has, like,
story.
From the very beginning, like, Young Cruz to this new guy that everybody's trying to, like, make into, like, this whole...
Yeah. Right. Fuck Power 106. This is the real Cruz show right here.
I'm working in between. I'm at 4040 Club doing, like, AV stuff. In between Rock the Mic, and this is like their 10-year anniversary party. It's a huge event. Everybody's in the building. I think Bill Gates is there.
Mm-hmm.
Hove is there.
Warren Buffett was there.
Warren Buffett.
I mean, sorry.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett. Sorry.
Call of Duty.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. See, I'm. Come on, man. I'm getting old. So, I get the call from the studio. Shout out to TT, who was helping run Rock the Mic, and he's like, "Yo, Meek Mill is here, and he needs you to engineer him." And I'm like, bro, Dez is going to kill me if I just leave right now. Like, this is the 10-year anniversary party for 4040 Club. I'm like, call Dez. If she says it's cool, I'm on my way. So I get a call over the I was actually supposed to call Meek's road manager, Phil. He was going to tell the story for me because he tells it hilarious. Like, he does, like, the voice and everything. So whatever. So then I get over the radio from Dez, like, yo, Meek Mill is at the studio and needs an engineer. Go now. And so, like, I dropped everything, threw the radio down, clocked out, ran to the studio. I got, like, this suit on because I'm at the 10-year anniversary party, and I got, like, this room full of all these Philly cats. And they're like,
God,
who the hell is this
you
dude
heard
about to engineer me? Yeah, like, who is this boy? Like, yeah, so like, it was crazy. Like, it was a lot because I wasn't used to, you know, Meek used to roll with, like, a major entourage.
Yeah.
And so, like, before I really knew who everybody was, it was, like, overwhelming. I'm like, man, who are all these dudes right here? So he's like, do you know how to engineer, guys? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty good. I work with some people. He's like, who you work with? So I start naming, like, all the Rock Nation artists or whatever. And he's like, all right, cool. Well, listen, these are the settings that I use. Like, at the time, it was, you know, there's, like, these particular settings that he's always been, like I said, very particular about his voice. So he's like, this is a template that was made that you work from, basically. And, you know, long story short, we worked in a couple days, and he starts getting comfortable. He starts requesting me. And this was, like, the very beginning, or not the beginning, because he had been working on DC3 already in LA for a little while, what was supposed to be an album, I believe, and continued it in New York. So during the New York run, I was the guy, you know, cutting records. So that was, like, the beginning of the New York
for the DC 3 process. Yeah.
And then how did he approach? I mean, it was just that he just kept asking for you over and over, and then at a certain point, you just became his guy.
Yeah. So I was the in-house guy, and I was the one he was comfortable with, and he had been with so many different engineers like over a period of time. He started off with Ruggs out of Philly. Shout out to Ruggs, who really helped him kind of shape his sound and what people know him for as an artist, and went through so many different people until he finally got with me and was just like, all right, I'm cool with his process. And so like over this time that we're working on this project, it's probably like, I don't know, probably a month in or so, he's like, we start entertaining traveling, you know, and he's like, would you travel with me, you know? And because, you know, he didn't want to like have to use another guy, and he didn't know what my situation was. And so he brought it up one time, and then we just kind of kept working. And I remember telling him like, yo, you mentioned like traveling. I'm really all about that. I really want to like move around with you. I like the vibe we have. Let's do it. Let's move around. And I remember being outside of the club one day, 4040, and he's talking to one of the managers, Carlos, and was like, yeah, I'm going to take your guy from you or whatever. And he's like, yeah, man, go ahead. So I remember the day I had to tell Dez, like, I was so nervous because I was like, man, I'm doing 4040 and I'm working like in-house at the studio. Like, and I got to tell Dez, I'm out.
You got to go let her down. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking in my mind. It was the easiest conversation I ever had in my life. Like before I could get everything out, she's like, bye.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. Like it was that easy. Okay, cool. So now we're gone. Like the first place we traveled to is Atlanta, and we work it at Ross's
estate.
Yeah. One of his estates.
Yeah.
So that was like the first like outside of New York.
I just want to take a second to shout out Desiree because a lot of people know this and a lot of people may not know this, but she was a super big part of where Meek is today and why he is free and I think of a good, you know, mind and body and soul. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So can you tell us the most random place that you ever had to record a verse?
In his apartment in Philly, we made Liddy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We made Liddy. We made Froze. I think you know. A lot of what you heard on DC4, we started in his apartment in Philly. We just made like this makeshift studio. Like, you know, like his homies were messing with me like, damn, you really like, really Spanish Bowl, man. Like, I put like the whole, like the blankets up on the shower rods. Like, it was like super makeshift and, you know, got like a little setup with some speakers and stuff, and we had to keep the volume at a certain tone because people were complaining. So that was probably one of the more random places. A couple hotels, but like that most memorable was like recording out of the apartment and getting that type of record out of it.
Do you have a favorite Ross moment?
There's a few, man. I love like Ross's energy, and like he's so positive and shows us all like a lot of love. But
I could probably think of mine if you can't think
of
mine.
Yeah, go ahead. Let Will go.
So we were in Vegas with Meek, Ross, and everybody. And I had just shot a couple of videos for Meek. And I guess Ross was like, he saw the talent, whatever it is. He was excited. So he was like, Will, come here. I got some words, some wisdom for you. You got to soak this up. He was like, Will, you gotta call yourself Director Wonton Soup. I'm like, nah, I'm not calling myself Director Wonton Soup. He's like, nah, Will, man. It's about marketing, man. Everybody gonna know you for Director Wonton Soup. And I was like, I was just cracking up. Yeah. Just when you brought that up, I just popped up in my head. Yeah. I was like, I'm not even going Director Wonton Soup, man.
That's legendary.
I gotta walk around with that name, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's legendary. I don't even want to tell a story now. Like too good. I mean, I just always have like good memories of Ross. Like we have like really dope vibes in the studio together when we're all there, and like, you know, laughing and joking and just like, you know, in that creative atmosphere, like when we're like playing the records for him and things like that, and kind of his feedback. And but he always shows love. That's one thing I respect a lot about him. He never changes and switches up on you.
Well, his tone is also just like one of the most amazing rap voices in big history.
Also, we heard a crazy story that that he got, he did one of his albums while getting like tattooed.
Yeah.
And it was just like off an iPhone.
Well, what happened is like Emix used to do voice notes so that he wouldn't forget certain ideas, because he's another rapper that like he writes stuff down, but like he does come up with like ideas sometimes just kind of off the top. So he would get the voice notes and then play them back, and they would recut them or whatever.
Yeah.
I believe that for sure.
Also we heard that Ross would listen to beats while just doing his ad libs. to hear how the ad libs would go over them.
That's hilarious.
Did you do the session with Big Sean and Ferg?
Yeah, that actually was one of those remote situations. So like we did the record and sent it over. Ferg did his part, and then Sean came in. I think at the end he came in with his piece. And I remember, you know, Sean wanting it to be kind of like a burn record, like where like it was him and Meek going back and forth. And Meek was like, yo, I really love the Ferg part on it. You know what I mean? So like he was like dead set on it, which I love Ferg's verse on it, because it's just like his tone is very like playful and catchy or whatever. So that was really dope the way all that came together. But yeah, it was like remote. You know, that all didn't happen at the same time.
Yeah. Are there any other features that Meek did that really like stick out to you?
My favorite is Black Grammys. And one of my favorite verses he's ever done.
How did that originate and how did it happen?
It was a self-made project. So during that time, it's usually like different... Whoever will contribute, like, you know, Wale will be like, yo, I have this record. Meek will be like, yo, I have these records. And they'll basically contribute to the compilation. So that was one that Wale contributed. And it already had, I remember when we cut it, it didn't have J. Cole. It was just Wale. It didn't have, like, Ross talking like that legendary, like, if Michael Jackson was alive, he'd want me to smoke one. Like, it didn't have any of that. So, Meek went in and killed it, and I think to this day he still was like the standout on that track. You know, like that. I mean, just the, hearing that, you know, that hunger and like, I'm gonna take my mama to the Grammys. Like, I love that record, and it spoke to me because I want to, you know, have those experiences as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were either of you there, or I mean, okay, I'm thinking of a certain video, which is of DJ Khaled playing horse with French Montana, Meek, Ross, and I'm missing somebody.
Right.
But like they all played horse for like $100,000.
Were we at Khaled's studio?
I think it was in Atlanta. Were they shooting?
Oh, no. I wasn't there. I wasn't there.
Was it Atlanta with the shooting?
That may have been Atlanta, yeah. Because that might have been what was the record that came from?
The artist name. He's an R&B artist.
Anthony Hamilton?
Yeah. Was it one? Anthony Hamilton? Was that the one?
The record we're talking about. Yeah. The one with Jadakiss. And,
yeah.
Was that the one?
Was it around that time?
It might have been.
Obviously, we weren't there.
Yeah. I'm like, I saw it on the internet.
You probably weren't there.
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of ball games for like
$100,000. That's what I'm trying to pin down. Like, when was this? Because it sounds like any other time. Like, you know,
I mean,
sound like a few
that
times.
Particular video shoot, they did play for $100,000. Yeah. Yeah, that was one with Anthony Hamilton. Anthony French Montana was there. Khaled was there. And they shot the video at the same time. So, but they did multiple.
Because it was on a basketball court.
It was on a basketball court. Yeah. That was at Ross's house. Yeah, Atlanta.
Were you just like, that's a lot of money for a game of horse?
It doesn't get old to me. That doesn't get old to me. Yeah. Like, the fact that they could throw around that type of money is like, I use it as motivation. You know what I mean? Like, I look at it as like, man, I can't wait to be able to say like, I'm gonna do this for however much, you know, however many thousands of dollars. Like,
I'm gonna play Chris Martin in pool.
Yeah, exactly. I'm putting real money on the table. I'm putting bands on the table with Chris Martin.
But then would you still lose?
I mean, I don't know. It's Chris Martin, man. I love him. Just give it to him.
Obviously, the big thing, I think, before this record was, you know, this lengthy beef or issue between like Drake and Meek, and it's been since settled, but what we're hearing now is that it started with like a correspondence that has happened over the course of a period of time. It wasn't just like, let's shake, you know, hands, let's show up at, you know, the Boston date and then let's record a song. In the earliest days, what were your sort of like feelings about the whole thing?
Like while it was going on?
No.
While it was getting
when it was getting resolved.
I mean, we were relieved. I mean, it was a situation that everybody was like, you know, we all were loyal and you know, always believed Meek to be a winner no matter what everybody was saying. I mean, it was like a lot to have to deal with criticism wise, but just hearing that, we're talking, everything's being fixed, of course it's like a huge relief, because I mean, those guys are way better as friends than enemies. You
totally.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and yeah, I was super relieved.
When was the earliest like talk of a collaboration?
I can't remember, because I know like it was very genuine, them making up. It wasn't about music. It was like they were just like getting back to being comfortable talking to each other and things like that. And then it just naturally progressed into, by the way, I'm making an album. Which, if like Meek said, if Drake was making an album, we would be trying to, you know, figure that out with
for sure.
Him. Yeah.
So there was a world where like Drake music wouldn't have been on this album. Like you did say that like it was one of the last features to come in.
Yeah, but that was just, like I said, I think it was timing with him being on tour and whatnot, but it was something that they definitely, when he was actively working on the album, was entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you think that Drake would end up on any of the other songs, like personally?
Yeah, we sent him Stuck in My Ways, and I guess it just wasn't his vibe, and he ended up sending us the idea for that record. So yeah,
and so Meek recorded his stuff first for that record.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Which I tell Meek, like, I don't think this was the case, I just joke with him like, man, you must intimidate people when you like put together a record like that's so fire, and you're like, yeah, by the way, go ahead and, you know, add something to this, you know what I mean, like all nonchalant or whatever. But it worked out perfectly. I love the record they did.
Yeah. So now the album is complete and out there and everyone has heard it. Mm-hmm. Have you changed your mind on like what your personal favorite record is?
No. Still Oodles and Noodles, Babies. And of course, What's Free, after everything came together the way that it did. It was already like, you know, when it was like a Ross record, it was one of those that we were like, man, like I wish we could use that record. but yeah, those two are my favorite, but Oodles and Noodles, it's just, it's so powerful. You know what I mean? Like, it just brought me back to, I just picture the video being like my block, like Scarface. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just kind of, you envision the whole thing without it even being on the screen. Like, you just could close your eyes and be like, I already know what this video is.
Who has come to you and asked for a recording to sound like Meek's vocal sound?
Teyana Taylor. Really loved the way that she sounded on Wins and Losses.
Mm.
And it was just like this conflict of schedule, and she was really adamant about getting me to record. And I heard like stories about her even when I wasn't there, like, you know, I want to work with like Meek's engineer.
Wow.
And it just never worked out for whatever reason. But, you know, of course, independent artists wanting that Meek Mill sound.
Yeah.
Who else? I remember I missed out on an opportunity with Rich the Kid when he was first getting started. Because like Meek, being with Meek for this amount of time, we've seen a lot of people come up. Right, Will? I mean,
oh,
we've
yeah,
seen
everybody.
Like some artists. Tons. That, you know, now they're like that thing, like 21, Rich the Kid,
Uzi, PNB.
Like there's Tory so Lanez. Many different artists. Yeah,
Tory Lanez.
Tory was a big one. I mean, yeah. Tory was like in the studio, mm-hmm. DC3 era, like scrawny Tory Lanez that was trying to like
super,
get his name
super
up.
Quiet.
Yeah, humble, Travis
super
Scott.
Humble guy. Travis.
Travis was another. I mean, so, you know, like I look back at some messages and Rich the Kid had hit me like, yo, I want you to mix my record. But at the time I was like, bro, I don't have time. Like I'm working with Meek. Then he ends up, you know, doing what he did. And I'm like, dude, I got to pay more attention.
Yeah.
What'd you guys do while Meek was away?
Yeah, that's Man, we you can tell your part.
Let me see what Migos play. Yeah. I mean, we were just still out there grinding, you know what I mean? Trying to figure out our own business, you know what I mean? So keeping ourselves busy. I've always had my clients videography wise, things like that. At the same time, we were also trying to work on music and looking for our own artists, things like that, potentially, you know. But other than that, for me, I knew Meek was going to get out, you know, and while I was in there, he would always give me a call to see how I was doing. I would, you know, send him photos, things like that. And, but for some reason, I just knew that he wasn't going to do his 2 to 4 years, you know what I mean, in my mind. So it wasn't like, oh, Meek's gone forever, I got to go find something else to do. It's just like, it's only a matter of time this man gets out. So I wasn't, you know, fret, you know what I mean? I wasn't really spazzing out or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had, in our history with Meek, we've had, like, unfortunately, a lot of hiccups. But this one in particular, I'm not going to lie, like, when it first hit, I was, like, stunned because it just sounded so...
Unreal,
permanent.
Right?
It sounded unreal, and it felt permanent, like, when it first hit. But then once we saw, like, what the momentum was and the plan to get him out, it was like, wow, there's a real backing in this situation. It made us more confident. We were at rallies together. You know, we were supporting all the events in between, like, you know, keeping, you know, paying our bills and everything else. But, I personally was in L.A. I don't know if you remember, like, when Meek came home, he was like, yeah, I'm looking for my engineer. I was in L.A., like, making it happen because... I mean, you know, I had to keep going.
I had to live.
And it ended up working in my favor because, like, during that time, I worked with, like, a whole other side of the label. Like, I was with, like, this pop group, Why Don't We? I was in a writing camp for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
that's, like, on the very, very end of the spectrum.
Yeah, so that's a whole other situation.
Those are, like, children.
That's a whole other vibe. Right?
Yeah. So how do you change up your, like, presets and everything for them?
I didn't change them much because... basically, well, actually, you know what I did? Because I started learning, having to adjust to going from Meek to this pop act. They're very minimalistic when they actually record in. So, like, they do very little, like, EQ stuff and compression. Just enough to get a clean sound. Because, you know, pop is very clean. Like, our sound is more, like, more rugged and low indie and, you know, crisp vocals and things like that, but like pop is like super clean, not as boomy. So I had to really get used to that because I was like, you know, having to hold myself back from like giving them 80 like super 808 records and things like that. So but I think I adjusted pretty well and got comfortable there and met some great people that I ended up communicating with once Meek came home and producers and things like that. So it was a dope experience, but when he came home, I was still there. I was still in LA because I'm like, well, what's the plan? I'm so anxious to get back and I wanted to see him like the first day he came home, but I'm like, what's the plan? Because I mean, realistically you have to, along with him being your friend, you have to take care of yourself. You know what I mean? Like in terms of like your livelihood and stuff. So while they were like going on there, like campaigning for, you know, him being home and the justice reform and everything else, there was like that mode where he literally didn't have time to record. So finally, like when it was like, all right, I'm really ready to go, they put together like a proper game plan. Like Meek was campaigning, like match my guy because he's over there in Popland doing his thing and it needs to be matched when he comes to me. It shouldn't be any different. So, you know, shout out to Dallas and the label and everybody that took really good care of me and
that's dope.
Made sure I was like well taken care of during this project.
Who has the best beard in MMG currently?
Rose hands down. Yeah, that's not even. You're not even gonna, like, yeah, no, I'm not gonna compete.
Best beard.
Yeah, actually, my barber was booked through Wednesday, so that's the only reason I'm like woofing right now like this.
Will, does it make you mad that you can never, with all due respect, you can never film anything as funny as Meek falling down his mother's stairs?
Oh, yeah, no, I can't, yeah, I can't top that one, no.
Well, listen, beyond this just being a fantastic project, you know, I think it's dope that both of you guys have had two very healthy careers and you've accomplished a whole lot, I think that it's amazing how far you've come. I think that, you know, it doesn't matter if people have slept on you because you built a career out of Young Guru going to sleep. So. Congratulations on everything. Thank you so much for coming through. And so happy that you guys put out such a dope project and everything is on the up and up.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for the platform and giving us a chance to sit down and talk with you guys.
No
yeah.
doubt. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, I'm Eric. You are Jeff. Together, we're It's the Real, no apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called A Waste of Time with It's the Real. And we also have our other one called Two Jews and Two Black Jews Review the Movies. Jeff, if people want to find out more about anything that's going on with us or the clothes that we make, where can they go?
You can always go to jaggedlittlefrills.com. itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com. We are It's the Real. People always say no apostrophes, no spaces to us, and yet they keep spelling it with an apostrophe and some spaces.
What a mistake.
So I want you to make the connection, you out there listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
When we say no apostrophe, no spaces, we're talking about It's the Real.
And we mean it.
So yeah. Put that in your little pea brain. You dig? You underdig? Dig. iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. SoundCloud.com/A Waste of Time. Or if you're looking for us on Spotify, search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. You can also go on Twitter at It's the Real, Facebook at It's the Real, Instagram at It's the Real. You can also find our music on Spotify and all of the streaming services.
Go to itsthereal.com/shop and cop something right now. Jeff, every week we love to shout out those of you who are good enough to push our message out there and tell people to listen to A Waste of Time with It's the Real. So, Jeff, who do you want to shout out?
I want to shout out two friends.
Yes.
I want to shout out two friends who got engaged and are going to be more than friends. I want to shout out Renford and Andrea.
Yes.
Shout out to them. I'm very happy for this blessed union of souls.
We were just thrilled to be amongst a pretty sizable group of friends celebrating their engagement. It was a surprise. There was a media blackout. It was a fantastic celebration. It was really, really nice to celebrate with everyone, including Rem's mom and Andrea's parents and
David Jacoby.
Yeah, a lot of fun people in the building. Jeff, I would also like to shout out two friends, Big Waz and Boss Nod, who have their very own podcast called Everything is Trash.
You should get engaged with it, people.
I don't want to say that we started their journey for them in podcasting, but I want to say that we've started their podcasting journey for them. When we had them up here, we knew that they were just geniuses. We knew they were hilarious, and we knew that they had a lot to say and a funny way to say it. Two of our great friends, Boss Nod and Big Waz, Everything is Trash. Please go listen to their podcast right now. As always, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
See you guys next week. Right.